This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, January 10th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, a jazz metamorphosis.
In the dark, in the cold, in the sky, I can fly. I am old, but I can see for miles and miles. I am silver, I am gold, I am white. I am blue, I am rock, I am chaste, I am time, I am truth. When twilight falls among the stars, I sit and tinker with your moods. I hear your thoughts, I move the tides. I am your god, I am your muse. I can be fire, I can be war. I am the daughter of Zeus, but tonight there won't be light, 'cause I can't shine without you.
We're listening to the jazz singer and composer Patricia Barber. Last fall, she came out with a CD of songs inspired by Ovid's Metamorphosis, the witty retelling of Greek myths by the classical Roman poet. Patricia Barber's CD is called Mythologies, and it's put out on the Blue Note label. She joins me today to talk about some of the songs on her CD, and I'm hoping about poetry in general. Patricia Barber, in preparing for this interview, I blew the dust off my Rolf Humphreys translation of Ovid's Metamorphosis. And the book is actually a lot of fun. I hadn't read it in maybe 20 years, but classical mythology is not an obvious subject for a jazz composer. What made you want to write a song cycle based on Ovid?
Well, after seeing a production of Metamorphosis, it inspired me to read Ovid. And I, of course, thought, well, this is going to be a bit of a task, an assignment. And I picked it up and I started reading, and it was just so fun and smart and funny.
This is the guy that also wrote The Art of Love, which is a wonderful primer on how to seduce a man or a woman, according to whatever your tastes are.
Oh, so, I'll have to read that.
Yeah, so he's a serious writer, but he's also a light writer,
right,
or poet.
So as I was reading it, I thought, my God, the characters, so many characters here. I wonder if I could write a song cycle based on this. But then it seemed like a luxury because I would have to do quite a bit of research, and it would take me a lot of time, and I didn't think that my life could afford that kind of time out. So I applied for a Guggenheim Fellowship, the first songwriter, really, in fact, to get the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got it, you know, I was thrilled, of course, and then I looked across my studio at the book and thought, oh, no, now what, you know? But I just started character by character, and it was surprisingly not easy, certainly not easy, but it wasn't difficult because of the book. It was there was a lot of rich material there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of poets, I'm thinking of Langston Hughes and the Beat Poets, a lot of them have tried to bring something from jazz, the syncopation or the rhythm of jazz, into poetry. And you're kind of doing the opposite. You're bringing more of a literary sensibility into jazz.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, how do you think jazz songs and poetry are related? Are they one and the same thing in your mind?
No, I would say, you know, I don't consider these jazz songs. I consider them songs. I consider myself a songwriter who is familiar with and steeped in the history and tradition of jazz. But I consider myself a songwriter in the American songwriting tradition of Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hart. So the song forms are very specific to that. And then, you know, to add the lyrics over there, it's just a matter of deciding that you don't want to use the same old ABAB.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can borrow some techniques from the great poets. It was my idea, you know?
Yeah, the poets you were turning to were not contemporary poets. You were going back to poets that rhymed, usually 19th century poets.
Yeah, for music, I really do think that you need rhyming poetry. And if you look through my songs, they're not always obvious rhymes, but it is some sort of rhyme scheme. There, you know, I really am, for the most part, very specific and precise, counting syllables.
Which came first when you were writing these songs? Did you write the lyrics first and then set it, or did you have
it? No, most of the time I write the music first, or I get a skeletal idea, and then sometimes they kind of haltingly move together.
Mm-hmm.
But very rarely do I write the words first and then the music, because to me, it will sound that way. You know, it'll sound, the music won't be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of poets actually write that way. They get an idea for a phrase that hangs in their mind, and it has a musical quality to it, and then they figure out the rest of the poem from that phrase. So that's not so different. One of the most striking songs for me on the CD was Morpheus. Now, I wonder if you could set that up. First of all, talk about who Morpheus was and how Ovid dealt with Morpheus.
Well, you know, Morpheus is the god of dreams. Sometimes people get that wrong. They think he's the god of sleep. In fact, his father was the god of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
His father would dispatch Morpheus out to help people who were having bad dreams. And by adjusting their dreams, which was Morpheus's talent, he could give them a better night's sleep. So he would enter your bed. You know, it's always so sexy the way they have these. They're always coming into your bed.
these gods.
Yeah. He would enter your bed and breathe on you or touch you or something. And then if you were having a bad dream, it would readjust the dream. And it actually could influence your life. Like if you were having a nightmare and your ship was going to sink, Morpheus would change the dream. And then all of a sudden when you wake up, your ship isn't going to sink anymore. It was really very powerful. And certainly if you're having trouble sleeping, he can kiss you and give you a change your dreams and give you a good night's sleep. So.
And so what did you do with that myth?
What did I do with that? I simply wrote a song, a very simple rhyme scheme based on Tennyson, where there are 8 syllables per line.
It becomes a, you're addressing Morpheus himself, right?
Yes, it's a plea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prayer, actually. It's a prayer to come and let me sleep.
I think I read somewhere that this was motivated by your own personal sleep problems.
Yes, I have insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it all my life. It's something I deal with every single night. This was very close to my heart, yeah.
And did it? Did the song help?
Did the song help? You know, it helps in that it it doesn't help me sleep, no, but it gave me something to do.
Why you're not sleeping, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, I have a bit of a sleep problem these days myself, so I'm going to try this song out. I'm going to put it on my iPod maybe tonight and see how
it actually might work.
Will you sing softly? Will you keep watch as the light begins to wane? Steadfast and sweet.
Now, Ovid was taking the Greek myths and capturing the story where there was a metamorphosis of a god or a person or something like that. He usually very lightly sketched that one moment. And for the myth of Narcissus, he did it fairly straight, I think. But you have done something. You have metamorphosized the myth of Narcissus in a way that's totally unexpected. Explain the myth and then what you did with it, if you would.
Well, Narcissus is the young boy who falls in love with his image in the pond, and he dies there. He just can never leave, so he starves to death. You know.
Yeah.
So as I was reading the secondary literature for Narcissus, there was something that ran through all the secondary literature, which was, I guess, these writers decided that Narcissus was a homosexual love and therefore a lesser love. There was always a pejorative slant to the writing.
Mm-hmm.
What surprised me, I didn't expect to find this. I thought Narcissus was going to be one of my smart and funny songs. I mean, you can see all the possibilities for double entendre and just, you know, mm-hmm. I thought this would be just a riot.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me mad. So I decided I was just going to go with their idea. Okay, so it is a homosexual love song. So, well, let's just go with that and make it seductive and interesting at that. And so, in fact, that's what this is. It's a love song to either yourself or to the other. It's never quite clear. I never make it obvious which it is.
I'm falling in love with her, hopelessly smitten and strangely driven to stop and stare and wonder. How have I been here before? And why do I want more and more?
To me, the most surprisingly moving song, and I was totally unprepared for it, and I'm not sure if I'm even going to pronounce it correctly, it was Phaethon.
Oh, Phaethon.
Which is about hubris and environmental catastrophe.
Well, Phaethon is a story about the son of the sun. He is the son, S-O-N, of the sun, S-U-N.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides, you know, in a young, arrogant way, that he wants to drive his father's chariot of the sun one day. His father reluctantly lets him, but is very, very worried the whole time, and tries to explain to him that he has to maintain control of the chariot, and that's much more difficult than he would think, right? So, in fact, Phaethon can't control it. He unwittingly goes too close to the earth and burns the earth beyond recognition, burns everything, all the crops, all the air, the buildings, the structures, until it's just one charred mess. And Mother Earth cries out for the species that are left, which are not very many, to have one last chance, and if Zeus would do us all a favor and strike Phaethon dead. And in fact, he does, and Phaethon dies, and Earth is saved by these last species being alive and propagating.
Slapping the reins, a dilettante drives winged horses of the sun into the open sky. Divine fire in the hands of mortal man, with a course charter then lost for lack of command. Dust to dust and dry as bone, high as hell without trees, without snow. Mother Earth now choking on sudden ash, begs for life for those with one last chance.
I don't know why, but I found that immensely moving. Maybe because that's the global warming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Issue is sitting right on top of us.
And strangely enough, in concert, people do start crying when the kids start rapping, because there's something so sweet about these young kids rapping these names of the species that they're dying off. They are the endangered species.
Independence Valley, speckled dace, Hico Valley, river springfish, fine dace, Pico blunt, nose shiner, Pico gambusia, blue shiner.
And they're species that we all recognize, which is what's so scary, you know.
Yeah.
Bears and jaguars and, you know.
Yeah, and we should add polar bears to that since you probably wrote the song, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So you don't read a lot, you said earlier, you don't read a lot of contemporary American poetry.
I don't. I get Poetry Magazine and I love it, and I skim through it very quickly. I know whether or not I'm going to enjoy something or not.
Mm-hmm. But you still read a lot of poetry. It's just that it's not contemporary poetry.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I read poetry like other people read magazines. It's just all over my coffee table, and I pick it up, and I thumb through it, and I read it quite a bit.
Just not contemporary American poetry. Why not, though? Why? What turns you off to contemporary American poetry, if you are, in fact, turned off to?
Well, it's the lack of rhyme.
Yeah.
Definitely. And also, there's a... sometimes I find there's a... self-righteous something about it I don't like. It seems to me that they're writing for each other. They're writing for other poets, academics who all understand the rules, but, you know, we're out here. We don't understand the rules. Maybe you should send the rules along so that we understand what you're doing.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't have a sense of a broad enough audience for you.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just doesn't pull me in. I mean, the reason I read Poetry Magazine is sometimes it gives me insight into what other people are thinking deeply, because they reveal their feelings. But I as poetry, most of the time, it leaves me bare. Every now and then, I find one or two that I like, and I always look for those. But I haven't been able to get one poet out of that.
Now, you know, one of the big differences between contemporary poetry and Ovid's time is that in the ancient world, they had the myths that everybody knew. The popular culture
True.
Knew it. The intellectuals knew it. And so they, when they read a lyric poem, they didn't have to re-explain the myth. But a contemporary
Right.
poet doesn't have that superstructure of myth to constantly bounce his poems off of. He has to sort of invent that and put that in his poetry. And that can often be really difficult for contemporary poets to do and carry along an audience at the same time. So the ancient world had certain advantages.
No, I don't know if I disagree with you or if this is tangential, but in fact, you know, there are so many things to write about.
Mm.
You know, I find in my songs, I mean, you know, you can write about science, you can write about society, you can write about consumerism, you can...
Yeah.
You don't have to write about
that,
myth.
And poets do, but the problem is, if you write a poem about science, you're excluding a lot of people who don't have any knowledge or interest in science. And so any subject that you choose immediately self-selects an audience, I think.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? No.
No, but then of course I'm a performer, so I'm always aware of, well, you know, here's where I have to bring people in.
Yeah.
Right here. You know, I can make this metaphor, but at some point I have to make it clear that in fact it's a love song. So I just wrote a song called Redshift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know the phenomenon redshift.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. The redshift. In physics, yes, I do.
In science, yeah, it's how you know a star is leaving you. It's going the other way.
Yeah.
As opposed to blue shift, which it means something is coming closer to you. It's a spectrum. You can see it from a certain kind of telescope.
And you use that as a metaphor for a long and a love song.
For a love song, yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's not on the new CD, folks.
Not on Mythology, no.
No. Patricia Barber, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Patricia Barber's CD is called Mythologies. She will be performing in New York City on January 18th at Symphony Space on the Upper West Side. She also performs regularly in Chicago at the Green Mill. You can find a link to her website on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you'll also find poetry news and features. Send comments about this program to podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the poetryfoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.